So Joe, did you order a 4 terabyte 2000?
Yeah, I ordered
18 MacBook Pro.
Yeah, don't tell Sharon because we also have to sell our house. Anyway,
well, yeah,
it's totally gonna be great though. Honey, we can stay warm. They're fanless. They're not.
A few people are probably wondering, or I've gotten questions from a few people about whether or not I'm really excited about those because of the 32 gigs of RAM and the 6-core processor.
Right.
And I will say that it's a step in the right direction.
About time. It's kind of like they're catching up to a year ago with PCs or 2 years.
Well, and I mean, you can buy laptops with 64 gigs of RAM. And the reason that they can't put 64 gig in is because of arbitrary thinness limitations.
Yeah, I know. Who was it? It was Marco, I think. Marco was commented at one point when they were talking about this new laptops. It was like a rumbling of the 2016 laptops before they came out. And he was like, and I have yet to ever hear another pro user say, just a little thinner.
Well, then, like, you know, the 2012 series, 2012 through 2015, like, these are not thick laptops.
No.
If they had kept this thickness, they could have done 64 gigs.
Absolutely. And they could have, the storage they'd have, you can actually do removable and replaceable hard drives if they were so
inclined. Oh, you wouldn't want to do that.
Well, saying they could.
What I mean by that is, like, the PCI Express storage that they're using is just, it is so, so much faster. I guess, but you could have like a
okay, but this is just ignorance. So I'm not asking a question to say anything else. But are you stupid?
Oh, when you said this is just ignorance, you were referring to me
I'm
as a person.
If you're truly in ignorance here is the bus, the throughput that gets to your RAM and back to your motherboard inside the Mac. The MacBook. I know it's super fast. I totally understand that that's really, really fast, and that's one of the big advantages. Is that unrepeatable through some sort of a PCIe or similar type? Is it like a motherboard connection? Can you buy a Windows PC with a fast motherboard and fast RAM that's just as fast in that communication, or can you not?
Sort of, but it's more complicated because I believe what they're doing is they're running two PCI Express SSDs in RAID.
Okay.
So, like, on this guy, the 13-inch from 2015 that I'm running, I actually swapped the SSD on it, and it was a PCI Express SSD, and that was no big deal, but I max out at around 800 megabytes per second, and these are getting, like, 2,500.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I was just curious of, like, if the extra space in there would allow them to, obviously, like you said, you get the 64 gigs of RAM. You could actually have space for more cooling.
Right.
Options. Keep the, you know, you could even potentially, I don't know. It's possible that you could go fanless, especially with some of the, with some of the lower.
Yeah. Ships. Like on the 13 inch base model could potentially, I mean, the MacBook
is
MacBook
fanless,
One right? is fanless. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. MacBook One. Really?
One port. That's what Marco Harmon calls it.
The MacBook One.
It's been dubbed the MacBook Adorable.
Yeah. We should call it the MacBook 480p. Because that's your webcam.
Also, that's about the fastest, the highest quality YouTube video we can play.
That's also true.
Oh, man. But what I will say is, seeing, Intel has released 6-core i9s, 4, and making a conscious effort to put that in, the amount of effort required to bring it to 32 gigs of RAM was actually fairly substantial. They have to have a separate controller, and they added 15% or so more battery life,
right.
or battery
capacity to get equal battery life.
And what that means is they looked at pros and they said, we care about you. Like we are making conscious right. efforts to make a machine that appeals to you.
Right.
So this machine doesn't appeal to me as a pro, but I am optimistic for the future. All right. You want to get into our follow-up here, Joe? Oh, we should do an intro.
Yeah, we should do an intro.
That was great. I love that intro.
Man, we are good at this.
Do you think we should swap out the intro music?
What?
Are you getting tired of the din, din,
din, din? Yeah. Yeah, we should. I should drop some sick beats.
I think you should. We're looking for like a 15-second tops. I think that's a small project you could throw yourself at. What?
Maybe do.
What I mean is in terms of time. Like, it's not going to take a lot of time to put together something that's 15 seconds. You should totally do that.
I should totally do that. That'd be a good little thing to force myself to actually do something. Put something down.
Guys, that's what Joe's going to do.
Totally going to do
it. For the next episode.
Or not, because I've said this sort of thing before. Anyhow, the important thing is... I got nothing.
I have a follow-up item.
Okay, so, hey, hello, and welcome to Helvetic, a podcast.
That's a good idea.
I'm Joe.
And I'm David.
And this is a podcast where we approach creative concerns creatively as Christians. The best intro ever!
No, you know, it's very mediocre. We've done much worse.
We've done much worse.
Helvetic is a podcast where we discuss being a creative from a Christian worldview.
Yeah, I love that. Actually, I really like that. I hated the alliteration.
It's the Occam razor, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You got to get the phlegm in there.
Yeah, if you don't get any on your tie, you're probably not saying it right.
So I have a piece of follow-up.
Okay.
I mean, we're already well into this. We just discussed the MacBook Pros. I have a note here to do that after follow-up, but I mean, here we are.
Definitely do that.
Here we are. The MacBooks Pro.
Because we could discuss the MacBook Pros and the MacBook Cons.
Con! So my follow-up point is that I said that DaVinci Resolve was used to grade the Lord of the Rings movies. That is not actually true.
Oh.
That was during an era where, well, it wasn't. But it is used on many, 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 many major motion pictures.
You're talking about color grading?
For color grading.
Cool.
And sometimes what they'll do is there's like an XML format for timeline. So they'll do the actual editing in like Adobe Premiere or Final Cut and then bring the XML file into Resolve to do the grading. And
so are major motion pictures using Final Cut, or is that kind of...
Some are.
Because it's kind of like prosumer grade, kind of, right? I mean, in that it's like if you're in a studio, it's kind of like if you learned Maya and these sort of 3D software programs, and then you went to work for Pixar. Pixar is going to be like, well, yeah, but you need to. That's great. We appreciate your knowledge of this, but to get up to speed, you got to run RenderMan, right? I mean,
RenderMan is an engine, but yeah,
you got to use our Pro package rather than so like these things that you can generally buy and out in the public are used on some things, but they're kind of there's kind of like a Pro grade stuff that's kind of. Behind the $50,000 paywall or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Is that kind of true?
For editing, I think less so. Okay. Because editing is editing.
I just said asking purely as questions. What I meant, asking purely for knowledge again. I know that asking is a question.
Asking?
Yes.
Huh, you're right. So Final Cut will get used more than, for example, Adobe or Apple has a package for... that competes with After Effects.
Okay.
And that virtually never gets used in like major motion pictures in Hollywood, that sort of thing. But Final Cut, it gets used, you know, if somebody told me that it's on 20% of Hollywood movies, I wouldn't be shocked. I think it's probably a little bit lower than that, but okay. So Final Cut does get used. Premiere is kind of an industry standard. I'm not aware of any like super pro grade. I think Autodesk might make something that's kind of like what you're talking about, where it's like a super pro grade editor. But it's a lot less important because you're just throwing clips into a timeline, trimming them, and adding transitions.
Okay. I was just curious. It's something I'm woefully ignorant of, and I know that it's kind of like everyone I knew was learning Blender to do 3D, and they'd use the free level stuff for like CAD drafting, free or inexpensive stuff for CAD drafting. But if you ever wanted to go to work for a shop that's really doing that stuff at a professional level, then there was like, okay, you know the principles of how to use this thing. You know the principles of, you know, 2D drafting or the principles of, you know, 3D rendering and 3D character design and rigging and things like that. But now you actually have to, there's this other level that's the pro grade stuff.
Interestingly, on the 3D level, it's so much of that stuff is based off of papers that are kind of in the public domain. And so the stuff that you see in Blender, 9 times out of 10, even down to like the terms, it's going to be the same as in Maya, the same as in Cinema 4D.
Oh, that's cool.
it's just a question of when Blender gets it, you know, gets a new thing. Mm-hmm. And also the keyboard shortcuts are really, really weird for Blender relative to every other program in the industry. But you can, there are ways to like configure it to work as Maya, but if you just jump in there and you're like, yeah, I'm going to use Blender, and then you use Maya, you're like, what is going on?
Right. Yeah. It's kind of like when you walk into Photoshop and every keyboard thing is broken because you learned stuff in GIMP.
Oh like, my gosh.
It's all broken. No. GIMP is broken.
And for the rest of your Photoshop, for the rest of your Photoshop days, you walk with a GIMP.
Exactly. That poor guy, he just limps around the office trying to... Anyway, I'm not going to...
How do I create a new layer? Actually, I think that's the same. Anyway.
Command L. Oh, okay. I'm fine.
So this actually kind of brings us into our main topic.
Okay.
If you will. I have two kind of aspects to this main topic. One is learning new things. This is kind of a recurring theme, and I think it's because being a creative and being a learner kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah.
So the two aspects of this are... When do you find time to learn slash what does that kind of look like? It's because I've been thinking about my own patterns in this. And then the other side of it is, how do you find the good stuff? How do you find the good tutorials?
Right.
How do you find the good books, the stuff that doesn't have misinformation especially, but also the stuff that has like more than just one nugget per 20 minutes of YouTube?
Right. Yeah.
So why don't we kick things off? And I'll explain why I've been thinking about finding time to learn.
Okay.
So the reason I've been thinking about this lately is the last few weeks, I've done very, maybe even a couple of months, I've done very little creating of anything. I just haven't been making things.
You're talking about for personal?
For personal, yeah.
Obviously, and, you're employed and...
Right. The context of this conversation is... In your free time or in your personal time, right, not right, so much client work or, you know, work for your employer. Right. 'Cause my employer would be upset if I just spent 4 weeks making nothing. but often I think what you get employed to do is typically stuff largely that you've done before or very similar to it.
Sorry. I just saw a thumb drive plugged into your port and I thought it just looked like a series of power ports. I didn't think of the context of, oh yeah, this is connected to a computer and he's reading it on the computer, but I saw that. I'm like, are you trying to charge your thumb drive? Anyway, oh, okay, dear. Carry on. So you're talking about trying to learn I've lost the context. I apologize.
So I've been a little bit discouraged by the fact that I just haven't been making things. You remember my everyday project last year. That was kind of a way of learning things. And the last couple of months, I've been spending way more time watching YouTube videos, watching Skillshare, Udemy. I have a couple of Udemy courses I've been going through. Mm-hmm. Reading books on different things that I want to learn how to do. Watching Patreon videos.
Mm-hmm.
And... I started to feel discouraged, and then I realized, well, no, I mean, I spent all of last year spending minimal time, you know, only watching a tutorial when it's like, I need to know how to do this thing, and kind of skipping through it, not watching the whole thing, just trying to find the thing that I'm looking for.
Yeah, looking for that nugget, right.
And, like, the fact that the past couple of months have been mostly learning, that's totally fine. I need to learn these things, and the reason I'm doing this is because I need to learn them. Like, I should be okay with this. I should be okay with less output for a season. And I kind of realized that that's a pattern in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll go through a few weeks of learning, a few weeks of creating, you know, maybe up to like 2 or 3 months of one or the other. And I don't know. What do you think about that? Do you think that's a reasonable, healthy pattern? Is that something you see in yourself?
Yeah, I think that's totally fine. I think that's entirely normal that you'll have these kind of seasons where you're, able to focus more or less on certain, especially things like that, that are a side thing, you're trying to learn info or learn things that are not necessarily like the core of what you're doing for employment or something. So it's just kind of like, I want to do this for fun, but sometimes life gets such that, you know, squeezing in time to do anything for, you know, for quote fun is almost impossible. So I think that's entirely reasonable that there'd be, especially as you're transitioning into a new job and doing, you know, learning how to work with them remotely, and there's just a bunch of moving pieces right now, and so kind of trying to get that and have that be effective and efficient is going to take up a lot of your focus and a lot of your concentration. And so it would be entirely reasonable that you'd be like, well, I'm just not going to be able to do daily stuff. Anything that I am watching, anything that I, you know, a course or anything that I'm working through is got to be pretty directly tied to things that I'm trying to be more efficient with my employment.
I should do that. I should be learning Illustrator right now, but I am not. I'm learning color grading.
Yeah, like that. Remember what I said the last minute and a half, kind of rambling? Yeah, we can cut that.
Well, it's good stuff. Like, I really do think that you owe it to your employer, especially if these skills are going to benefit you outside of your employment, you owe it to your employer to be keeping up on and learning new techniques and things that are going to help you be better at your job.
Right.
Especially if they hired you for something and you know that you're not as good as it, as good at it as maybe you could be or should be.
Right.
And I do need to spend time learning Illustrator. The reason that I'm doing color grading right now is because I just filmed a wedding, and I know something that I was weak on in the last few weddings that I've filmed is the color grading part. And so I don't expect this to be more than a week or two. And after that, I'm totally going to get into Illustrator.
Sure you are.
Dive headlong into it. I also just hate Illustrator with the passion of a thousand suns.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as one does. You know, I found, I can send you a link to a Udemy instructor that I think is kind of fun for, he was really good with Procreate. He's done Affinity Designer and Illustrator as well.
And I may check that out.
What I'll do is I'll send you a link actually to his YouTube. You can check him out, see what you think of his style. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to drop the $10 or whatever when it's on sale, get it out of Udemy. Anyway, but I thought his Procreate tutorials was really well organized. It had some clear, like, okay, let's do these things, and you kind of have some clear tasks to get through. But also, he was really good at finding those little things that, like, make it more efficient to use. So I enjoyed his class.
Yeah, well, and put that in the show notes too.
Yeah, I'll do that.
So is this something that you find in yourself? Do you tend to, because the other thing, when I say I'm not making anything, I should point out, like, as I'm watching a DaVinci Resolve tutorial, I probably have DaVinci Resolve open with some clip kind of experimenting to find the levers and things. But there's a difference between that and, like, even small personal projects where you're going to export something and either put it on your Instagram or just have done it. You know what I mean? Like, there's a difference between just opening the software and goofing around to play with the settings and producing something for yourself or for your social media, whatever.
Right. Yeah. Getting to the point of an actual finished product. That's the difficult part for me.
Is that something you've kind of been doing with the audio stuff where you know, right now you're kind of in a season where you're watching the tutorials, reading the stuff and playing with the applications, but not necessarily making a 30-second bumper for Helvetic.
Right, exactly. I've made some stuff, and it's kind of like it'll say, like, one of the applications I use is called BeatMaker 3, and every time you open it, you can open the existing project, the project you last had open, or you can open a new project, or you can load
a saved project.
A saved one. Yeah. So I basically tend to just keep opening the same project, throw everything away, and try other stuff.
Right.
You know, so I don't end up with really much at the end of the day, but I have created some stuff in exactly kind of going through different tutorials, different things I can find on it. That's the problem with a lot of these things, especially if you're trying to do an iOS version of them, is there's a dearth of good content out there on explaining how to do it.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
It's kind of, again, comes back to the point of our conversation is, you know, you can, I don't mind searching YouTube and finding tutorials and things like that. What I hate is coming to the end of like a 23-minute tutorial and realizing I didn't learn anything. I mean, like, they had a couple of cool things here and there, but I didn't really learn anything. I don't have anything I can walk away from and say, ah, that's concrete. That was 23 minutes of my life that was well used. Mostly it's just like, well, that just went to the wind.
Oh, yeah. that kind of brings us into our other, the other side of this. I just, before we jump in there, I just want to say, if you're like me and you're finding yourself like, oh gosh, I haven't really watched a tutorial or read a book in a long time.
Right.
You know, 2 or 3 months, this is ridiculous. Or vice versa. I've just been learning. Mm-hmm. When am I going to make something? I think that it's important to be encouraged and look at your career / your learning experience, your growth as a creative over, you know, put a wide angle lens on and look and go, oh, it's just like, it's a lot of highs and lows in terms of education versus actually producing things. And that's okay, because when I zoom out, it looks like a smooth line. And to realize that that's kind of, maybe that's just the way that you learn. Like that's,
yeah.
Maybe for some other people, they find that, it's always like a mixture. They schedule an hour on Mondays for learning and an hour on Fridays for creating. And that's how they live their life.
Right.
But
I've never met that person, but that would be fascinating if we did. So if you're that person, make sure to send us some feedback or follow up or follow back or feed up.
Follow out. Have you heard of follow out?
Yeah. No.
That's yeah. Where if...
this is where I lie.
This is where if you had a question for a host on one of my other podcasts, or if you had other podcasts and I had a question for one of your hosts, mm-hmm. they would respond to that in the follow out section.
Oh, okay.
It's a real thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any questions?
I was thinking if I have any questions for Jim. I'm like, when are we going to get coffee? Ask him when we're going to get coffee.
I will. When we? Who's we?
Just me and Jim.
Okay. I will. I'll ask him that.
Or you could come, but if you could sit at a different table.
Also, it's funny. the latest form of vlogging is in a hiatus right now.
Oh, it is.
Which happened a week or two ago.
Uh-huh.
And I just published the episode where I finally talked about it.
Uh-huh.
So now listeners are going to be like, oh, cool. Oh, they stopped.
Wait, how long are you guys on hiatus?
It's not clear. I'm kind of hoping for fall to be back up and running, just like a summer hiatus, but we'll see where things go.
Mm. How many episodes you guys got out? Like 12 or something, right? Or
13. Nice. And then we stopped. So lucky number 13.
Total ever. Huh? 13 episodes and then the whole thing's gone.
Arrival, the movie. Have you heard of that? Have you seen it?
Yes.
It's a really good movie.
I really enjoyed that.
Beautiful.
Here's the deal. Wait. It was an okay movie.
Why?
The reason I say that is because then you're going to say it's a really good movie, and then people are going to go to it and be like, oh my gosh, I'm ready for the really good movie. And then they'll be like, it's pretty good. Actually, I thought it was really good. I just don't want to set expectations too high. I was very pleasantly surprised, though.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. That was graded in DaVinci Resolve. I was going to say that earlier,
wow. Okay.
But I forgot. And then I just looked down at my laptop where I Googled because I thought that I remembered that and then wanted to make sure so I didn't say something like last time about the Lord of the Rings.
Remember how I told you about saying things?
Yeah.
Stop that. What do you think this is, a podcast?
So, Joe, how do you find the good stuff? How do you find the good educational content?
Oh, man. It's a crapshoot out there. Honestly, it's very difficult, I think. So one of my thoughts was Udemy. So you're paying for these courses. So they're going to be a complete course. They're going to be, you know, thought out, practiced, have a structure to them, and you're going to get this really good content. And what I would always do with Udemy courses, I've bought quite a few. So I've probably invested not a huge amount of money, but I've probably spent over $100 in Udemy buying different courses,
mm-hmm.
probably a little more than that.
Probably spent about 30.
Yeah. Anyway, so, but I would always look for, like, if there were three courses on Adobe Illustrator, I would look for the one that was the longest, because that's got more content.
Mm-hmm.
You're
mm-hmm.
winning, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wrong, sometimes.
Minutes per dollar.
Right, exactly. And it really was. I was, like, that ridiculous about finding that. But I found this one course on Adobe Illustrator. I imagine it's a good course. And this may give you a clue. Because I couldn't get through the darn thing. Like, I was 3 or 4 courses in. It's a 13-point-some-hour course.
Uh-huh.
And I was probably 2 hours in, and I hadn't drawn a darn thing. not a stick, not a dot. I was like, this is Adobe freaking Illustrator. Are you kidding me? I'm 2 hours in, and we're still dealing with page settings and... Oh, it was so frustrating. And So probably what I'll do, it's actually a highly rated course too. So the ratings aren't necessarily, I mean, they're helpful, but they're not golden. But it probably is really good and people are going, yeah, this is really good. Just skip like the first 4 hours and get into where he starts dealing with da da da. Because the guy seems like a decent instructor and all that. But anyway, I was very frustrated. And I've run into this. One of the things that kind of opened my eyes on this is I signed up to become a Udemy instructor.
Ooh.
Yeah. Now, I've never put out a course. I signed up to become one.
Of course.
I was getting ready to, and I'll leave this sigh in here for everybody else. Join me as we sigh. I was getting ready to put out a course actually on Affinity Designer. This was before Affinity Photo actually came out.
Oh, wow. This was a
ways back. Yeah. It's like, there needs to be courses on Affinity.
Was I born here?
Well, I think so. Anyway, there needs to be courses on Affinity Designer. This is a really great software package. I really like the way it works. I can't find good courses on it. Okay, I'll make a course on it. And then I would realize partway through this process, one is I probably should have, because I could have been one of the very first courses on there for Affinity Designer. So it wouldn't have been a bad
thing. And you could have made it really long with some awkward silences.
Lots of awkward silences. You know I'm good at that if you're a regular listener. And anyway.
See, if you have silence skipping on, you miss half of the...
The key to a good joke is timing.
You miss half of the...
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Half if you of have the brilliance that is this podcast.
You're missing out on all of my awesome silence. Anyhow, if you're a designer, it's not just the lines, but it's the empty spaces between the lines. You know what I'm saying?
You got to read between the lines.
So what I'll do for the next time I do like a silence type joke is I'll be like, you know, the key to a good joke is timing.
So I tried to do that. This was with a coworker at Olive Tree. I was like, hey, do you know what the most important thing about comedy is? And he's like, what? And then I went back to working. And I was going to, like, 2 or 3 minutes later, like, tap him on the shoulder and tell him timing. Totally forgot for the rest of the day. I saw him get up to leave. I said, bye, Adam. And then I remembered. And so I literally chased him out into the parking lot and yelled,
him. Timing!
And he's like, what? The key to comedy. And he's like, oh my gosh.
You're insane.
I wish I was that clever, but I just forgot.
So anyway, what I found with like Udemy courses is I think it's a pretty good platform. There's a lot of good stuff on there. There's a lot of junk on there. Mm-hmm, and it's unfortunate. Skillshare is honestly the same way. I think I use Skillshare currently, and I have not bought several courses on Udemy because I was going to buy the course, and then I went and looked on Skillshare, found something similar, and was like, oh, I'm going to try this first because I've already paid for Skillshare. I paid for a year of Skillshare. And I think it's been... Both of those are typically, for me, are better than... just going onto YouTube and looking up videos here and there from random people all over the internet, but just realize that Skillshare and Udemy are videos from random people on the internet. They are kind of forced to put some structure in place. They're forced to have kind of, or they're expected at least to have some sort of kind of a beginning, middle, and end of what they're doing so they can kind of bring it in for landing. And you feel like you've actually, okay, I've actually completed this course. I feel like, in fact, they offer, some of those things offer a certificate of completion, which is quite literally worth the PDF file that it's sent to you in. but at least you can kind of, one thing about that is you can kind of say, okay, I paid for this course. I started it. I went all the way through it. I watched all the lessons. If there were test things in between lessons, which some of them, I'm thinking there's Coursera too. I think I might be thinking of that as far as the testing. I don't think there's any testing in Skillshare or Udemy.
I think Udemy can have it.
Can? Okay. That's possible. Anyway, basically saying that there's something that says I went all the way through that and brought it and came to the end of that course. And that's good in that it gives you as the user some sort of structure to hang your hat on as far as getting through rudimentary knowledge of what particular topic you bought that course on, you know?
Yeah.
So that there's that advantage. How about you? What have you found out there?
Yeah, so the reason that I bring this up is because trying to learn color grading and color correction for video. The tools in video are very different. Not very different, but they are different enough from the tools in like Lightroom. Lightroom, you can kind of figure it out with a lot of poking at different sliders. You kind of, everything's fairly self-explanatory, and playing around with it, you'll kind of get it.
Okay, so, and what, sorry, what program are you talking about? You said VIA, is that?
What? Oh, video.
In
what?
Video. Oh, okay. I thought you were referring to
yeah.
program.
Yeah, so when you're working with video, like, you're not going to have the same exact tools as in Lightroom.
Right.
The you
Lightroom
know,
is for still photos, obviously.
Right. And, I mean, it's interesting because you're still just manipulating RGB data, but it's, for whatever, like, the art of photo manipulation and the art of video color correcting and grading, they came up in two different schools, and that, you know, those schools have not communicated very much. They've started to borrow things, like a lot of color correction suites in video have started to get the curves correction from photography. But for the most part, you're kind of, they're kind of two different worlds, and video is a lot harder to grade or to edit because there's just a lot less data. At least at the consumer slash prosumer level, you're not shooting raw.
Right.
So there's a much greater chance of you just completely wrecking your image because you're like, oh, I'll just tweak the white balance. So what that has led to, and it's the reason that I bring this up, is there is so much misinformation on what the different things in DaVinci Resolve or Adobe SpeedGrade or what have you. There's so much misinformation on what those things do or how to use a LUT.
Right.
And
what is a LUT? Sorry.
Color lookup table.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I think you've actually already explained this to me once more, at least.
It was in the last episode.
Sad. Go on.
And it's been really frustrating because I'll watch one YouTube video and be like, oh, well, this controls this. And I'll look at it and be like, yeah, I think that controls that. And then I'll go using it like it controls that. And then somebody else will be like, well, this kind of controls this, but you're only supposed to use it when you're in this color space and when you have these settings. And really, you should be using this other thing. And so I use that thing. I'm like, ah! And then you find out that he was also wrong, but more technically wrong. And it's just been really, really frustrating. So, searching YouTube, searching Udemy. Linda doesn't really have anything good on, because Linda's a good one. Where Linda is curated.
Curated. Actually, I will say the stuff I've found on lynda.com has been very good, and I've gotten access to that for free through our local library, and I love that. It's been very good. Their quality is pretty high.
Yeah, and Linda's better for learning the software than it is for learning the underlying
principles
kind of? Like you can learn how to use DaVinci Resolve and kind of get a basic idea of how to do a color grade.
Right.
But in terms of like the art of color grading, they have nothing on that. At least not that I've found.
Okay.
And so this led to me kind of using other search methods, if that makes sense. Things that I would, like, if I were looking at something else, if I were trying to do actual research on the 13th president of the United States, I wouldn't just go to YouTube and watch whatever video comes up. I would go to potentially Wikipedia just to get started with sources. Sure. I would go to
Encyclopedia Britannica.
Right.
Look for some, yeah.
I might look on like history buff message boards and just see what books they recommend,
right.
Either through posting there or through searching. And so I kind of had to bring this other world of like, well, what does it look like to do actual research? What if I do that for color grading?
Right.
And so that led me to the Colorist subreddit on Reddit, which led me to Lift Gamma Gain, which is a message board for colorists.
Okay.
It led me to a book that I'll recommend in the recommendations section.
Sweet.
And actually, this is something I've found more often than not, is books are often a lot better than YouTube tutorials if you're really trying to get in and understand not just like how to use Photoshop to make a square or to make a rounded rack, but when to use a rounded rack versus when to use a square.
Yeah.
Because the book will spend so much more time getting into the things like, well, this is the history of the rounded rectangle,
right.
And it was developed for these reasons. It's been used, like, you'll find rounded recs throughout art history in these places.
Copyright
and,
Apple.
Copyright Apple. and and talking about like the philosophy of rounded edges and that sort of thing.
Right.
Whereas, you know, if it's just some guy standing there talking to a webcam, that's not going to do well on YouTube. So those things don't tend to live on YouTube. They don't tend to live on Udemy. They don't tend to live on the video sites. They tend to live in books.
Right.
And I have found, this is discussed like all the way back to when they were using analog methods for correcting and grading film.
Oh, wow.
Not really diving deep into that, but just explaining, this is why the tools are the way they are. They're this way because this is what colorists, when they were first making digital tools, were used to.
So were they, I mean, did they like use, are you talking about using like gels and things like that over a print or something? Or I'm just curious, like, how would they do that?
Yeah, sidebar. Like I said, they didn't get very far into the details.
But and I guess there was some physical, like they're physically manipulating with how the light is going through a piece of film. Right.
Right. One of the whole idea of like, thinking in terms of hue, saturation, lightness versus RGB,
mm-hmm.
film records a lot more like the human eye.
Right. Yeah.
Than we perceive like RGB or HSL. And so getting into the nitty gritty of like how the sensor captures data, that sort of thing, versus how film captured data.
Right.
Those are the things that it was talking about. It wasn't so much talking about the physical processes involved.
Okay. I was just curious. That's really interesting.
I can tell you that like that. If you're trying to like overexposed, underexposed footage, you basically leave it in the solution longer.
Right. Yeah.
Like little things like that. And so,
have you ever done physical film development?
I have not.
Oh, it's fascinating.
I would really like to.
You see, yeah, it's really interesting.
So anyway, for me, that has been the golden ticket. It's like figure, and it's also been the same. I was telling you via text message. I was trying to learn Houdini,
right?
And I subscribed to this guy's Patreon. He seems to know what he's talking about, but sometimes he just says these off the wall things that I know are wrong.
You're like, wait, how can you know more than me? You're on the internet. Wait, I'm on the internet. Oh no.
this is the problem, is we're all on the internet. I realized this in theology too, the internet and also just publishing in general.
Mm-hmm.
Like it used to be that if you wanted to get the attention of a large number of people, you had to have something to say. Or at least be really good at appearing to have something to say.
Right.
And now it's like, I've described it as if you give every idiot, every heretic, every intelligent person, every scholar, every person in the world a megaphone of equal volume.
Right.
You've described Christian publishing. You've described the internet. You've just described the world.
Yeah. Like, oh, this Christian publishing is such a mess. It's like, nah.
Well,
publishing right. is such a mess. Nah. The world is such a mess.
And it's just so much louder now.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it so hard to find the good stuff.
I mean, that's a really good point. I mean, that's actually an excellent analogy is one thing that I found as far as you were talking, kind of pulling this back for a second, you were talking about learning the principles of, you know, obviously there's not a course on how to use the rounded rectangle, the principles of that, the history of that, blah, blah, blah.
Right,
but
right.
This is an example.
But maybe a button. Like the concept of a digital button versus right. a physical button versus like at some point somebody had to invent the button.
Right. And so one thing that I actually found as an online learning resource that was really interesting and you can get, it's not free. It's actually very expensive in some ways, but it can be free if you can make a case for why it should be free for you. It's called Coursera, which is an online learning thing. It's basically trying to bring actual university classes
mm-hmm.
To the masses, as it were. And if you pay their full price, they actually give you, I don't know if you can actually earn college credit, but they give you actual certificates from an accredited mm-hmm. college. They won't give you, you know, you don't get, again, the certificate from an accredited college that's not a degree isn't
right,
really
right.
worth much, but it means more when it comes from like one of the courses I took was from CalArts.
Yes.
That's like a real school, a physical mm-hmm. brick and mortar school, real teachers that teach in a real classroom, you know, put this course together. And they were talking about, this is the kind of the opposite of what you were saying about lynda.com. Lynda.com is really great for the tool. Here's the tool. Here's Adobe Illustrator. Here's step-by-step how you use this. And then here's the next course on Adobe Illustrator. You can take that and then you can learn step-by-step the physical, or not the physical, but the practical usage of that tool. The CalArts stuff that I found was like, graphic design and the history of graphic design mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. this sort of thing, where they're talking about, and here's why this, and here's when this, and here's how this. So you can kind of have some, you can bring some depth to your understanding of the why these principles are what they are, and why, if you want to violate them, break these principles, sometimes that's really powerful and good in that you're, you know, breaking new ground, but it's giving you those foundational things to start from to understand why they're there in the first place. Mm-hmm. So you don't just break them, you know, because they're there, but you break them because, oh, they did this for this purpose, and here's why I think it'd be neat to try something different.
Right, right.
You know, so it's kind of, that has been valuable, and it also involves deadlines and specific things you have to get through in certain times, because it's a real, it's based on a real college course.
Yeah. So Khan Academy is something that's a little bit similar there. Mm-hmm. Pixar has a huge swath of stuff up there.
I really want to go through
that. And they have art history.
I was looking at some of our old episodes, and I saw your recommendation of the Pixar in a Box from Khan Academy. And I really think that'd be worth checking out. Even if I never really get into doing the 3D mm-hmm. design stuff, I think I just adore Pixar. I think they're such an interesting company anyway.
So that's been useful. When you mentioned CalArts, that reminded me, find a school that's well known. I mean, CalArts, you can't really get much better than CalArts for like art degree or right. design, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of like the people in Hollywood are coming out of.
Right.
And I was going to recommend, I've done this a handful of times, where you go to their website, you look up their courses, you look up their syllabus, you find in the syllabus what books are going to be used, you get those books.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a good point, because that can really, it can give you at least a portion of it. Mm-hmm, and it's mm-hmm. and again, like you're saying, that's a way that you can, that's something that's curated. Somebody is hopefully, it's not just the professors trying to sell their book, though that happens. That's a curated list that has hopefully stood in some sense, at least a test of time, or some earlier edition has kind of proved its worth, you know, that sort of thing.
It's almost the case, like with YouTube and stuff, where, this is something that Sarah and I have been talking about, because she's trying to teach hand lettering. Mm-hmm. And when she teaches hand lettering, she takes it fairly seriously, in the sense that like you could hold a hand lettering class that's more like a paint and sip kind of class, where it's like you're going to get better at holding a paintbrush probably while drunk and
winning
and
levels. I've seen her as total sidebar, but I'll let you get back to it.
Sure.
But I've seen her kind of advertise for this on Instagram, that she's going to have another course or another class. I'm like, I would like to come take one sometime. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to sit in a room full of being the only guy in a room full of ladies. Being like, how you doing? it's going to be this social thing.
If you do that, can you fake a chain smoker voice? Hey, how you doing? Just talk that way the whole time.
Yes. Yes, I can. Except I sound like Batman and Elmo mixed together. Go! No.
You're asking me to leave? Is that?
Yes, please go.
Because I can't imagine what else you would be asking for at this point. So anyway, she has this problem where people will come to her class and they're kind of expecting a more fun class. And she's much more about like, by the time you leave this room, you will know these things. Mm-hmm. And you'll mm-hmm. be able to do these things. And if you practice, you will get good at this thing. Versus a lot of other classes, and there's nothing inherently wrong with these other classes, right? Like, there's nothing wrong with paint and sip. There's nothing wrong with, hey, bring your friends. We're all going to do a little bit of hand lettering, and at the end of the day, you'll have a nice thing to put on your wall. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But
right.
what she's doing is very different. And so there's kind of like the cost expectation is people expect it to be the same cost, even though they're getting a lot more or something very different anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been realizing YouTube is kind of the same way, in the sense that like a lot of those videos are just uploaded with like, well, if you're looking to very quickly correct overexposed footage, just do this. And you don't have to understand anything. And most people are looking for that.
Yeah.
So
And honestly, what's kind of funny is when you are looking to just do that and you're like, all I can find are 45-minute videos.
But they still communicate the same amount of information. Right. That's the frustrating thing.
Right.
Hey, guys, so you should subscribe to my channel and
smash that like button.
If you so desire. Actually, Peter McKinnon,
Yeah, he's good.
He is really good, and his stuff, I'm always surprised at how he brings a level of quality to pop-level tutorials.
Man.
That really, like, you can tell he's been in the industry for a while, and he knows what he's doing.
Right.
And that's the other thing, is when you find somebody like that, do hit the follow button, smash the follow button, because...
And hit that bell. And
exactly.
And the little alarm reminder thing on the bell, because the bell itself doesn't do anything, apparently.
Because, you know, who knows? You might be looking for a tutorial. You, instead of searching all of YouTube, you can search his channel later.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And Peter McKinnon does do a lot of kind of kitschy stuff, too.
Yeah,
but
most of his stuff, at least as more recent stuff, is more vloggy. But
right.
He does have, when he does do a tutorial and he's talking about specifics of that, he really knows his stuff. And even watching, it's kind of, in a way, it's kind of like watching like Casey Neistat or something like that, where even watching their vlog, you go, wow, so this can be done really well edited really well and made interesting on a nearly daily basis. That's crazy.
Yeah. All right. So I think that's a smattering of tips anyway. Another thing to just mention here, if you are interested in like video or 3D stuff, is FX PhD is another really good website where it's taught by like people who've been in the industry for a long time. And that's another thing to look for is like, if you can find some sort of a bio on the person whose tutorial you're about to watch and you find out they've been doing this for years or they went to CalArts or they have, like you're just looking for some bona fides before you commit to a 45-minute video, that can be really helpful.
Yeah. Aaron Blaze is another guy that's really good as far as like animation and doing anatomy for like animals and things like that, but in more of an animation sense. And one of the ways I found him is he was a Disney guy. He worked on animation for Disney and has worked on famous films that you've heard of for sure. And so finding those people that actually, you know, they were sat under the tutelage of the 12 Angry Men.
Right.
Or whatever. It's not 12 Angry Men, but the 12 Angry Men is a movie about a jury. but... The 12, what's it called? Anyway, it's the old school, old guard Disney animator guys had this expression they called them, and they were, but they really hammered the fundamentals in people. And so those people that kind of came out of that group, you can see that, wow, they're pretty next level on a lot of their stuff.
Lucasfilm is another group that's a lot
sure,
like that.
Yeah, where VFX and things
if
like
they
that.
Touch things, it's just magic. It's right. Just, it's like, oh, you understand like light on a level that I...
Except scripts. Yeah, if they touch scripts.
Well, what am I thinking of? Not Lucasfilm. ILM.
Yeah.
Industrial Light and Magic.
Yeah, ILM is amazing.
Which came out of Lucasfilm.
Right.
And the other thing I just want to hammer is find the communities. Ideally, participate in them. Don't be too needy. Google things before you ask, but participate in them and find the communities where the experts are hanging out. Because every once in a while, you're going to have a question. And if you can just say, hey, how does this work? Some kind... guy who did 5 years at ILM will step in and say, oh, it's this. And that's also where you're going to find the best links to tutorials, etc. So the communities are the big thing, which is something that we're trying to create with Helvetic. Hopefully one day.
One day. We're ever so slowly, but ever so tentatively heading that direction.
All right, so let's do recommendations real quick and then wrap up. My recommendation is a book called The Color Correction Handbook, Professional Techniques for Video and Cinema. And it's written by someone who's been in the field for a long time. It's well written. There's a couple points where like I chuckle, which you wouldn't expect for like it's just a really dry book on color correcting and color grading. But really, really thorough. I've talked about it already in this episode. So that is my recommendation. And also just finding books in general. The Elements of Typographic Style, I've mentioned before.
That's a fun book. Yeah, it's a good book. Yeah, there's some... I want to just throw an amen with you on that I found books sometimes are better at helping me to slow down and really ruminate on what's going on, even in a program. They're a little more problematic when you're talking about books about a specific program rather than books about principles. Principles are, you can find great books on principles. The program books tend to get dated very fast. And so they're kind of painful to sometimes, like I got the Affinity Designer book, which I think is really excellent, really well done. But now they're, you know, a couple of generations past when they did the book and it's showing its age a little bit. But what I would recommend, speaking of Affinity Designer, and thank you for letting me keep it, or let that be my recommendation, is Affinity Designer finally came out on iPad.
Oh, yes.
Holy...
Sarah's been loving that.
Moly. It is so good. I mean, there's definitely some... I've found some bugs. I've reported a couple of bugs to Affinity. Found a couple of things that are a little weird.
It's fast.
It is so fast. It's crazy fast. It's faster at zooming on the iPad than Adobe Illustrator is at zooming on anything, including a 64 gig monster of a Windows desktop machine. I'm not going to name any names, but I know a guy. But yeah, no, I was actually showing I was showing one of my coworkers at Olive Tree that it came out. I'm like, you have to see this, and they were like, what? So I pinched to zoom and showed how quick it zoomed in on this very complex image. Mm-hmm. And it was Molly. And she was like, whoa, yeah, that's quick. And I was like, no, hang on a second. And I opened another program, Graphic, which is another vector drawing program on iPad. And up till the release of Affinity Designer was the best one on iPad that I've found so far. And I zoomed on a very simple image, zoomed on it, and then we sat there and watched it for like 5 seconds. And then suddenly this fuzzy thing becomes crisp, and you see, oh, it is a vector image. It's just, it took it that long to resolve drawing itself. I mean, it's, Affinity Designer is probably a factor of 20 faster in zooming.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's cross-platform, and it's more ubiquitous. And yeah, it's
crazy.
Sarah was complaining because the raster brushes are not true vector, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like and I was like, well, yeah, but you can work in this application, you can work at, you know, 4 or 6K, not have any lag, and, you know, that's going to print at any size. Like, if you're at 6K, you can print at billboard size. And, you know, you're still able to manipulate these points and move things around. And we were trying to come up with, like, projects where she could use... because she's like, well, why don't I just draw it right the first time? I'm like, well, because that's a good point. And if you came from an analog media, that's really good. But like, this is a different way to think about it. And it fits much better into a kind of a production workflow where the client might come back and say, can the loop on that G come a little lower? You don't have to redraw it. You just grab one of the handles and drag it down.
Right.
And if you're working at 6K, even if you're using the raster brushes, no quality has been lost.
Right. Yeah. And can this go underneath that? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It. I mean, she uses Procreate with layers, but she, you know, this is going to also create a layer for every stroke. Whereas, you know, with Procreate, she was like doing a layer per word, maybe that sort of thing.
Yeah. And I love, by the way, I don't think this is a replacement for Procreate.
Right.
I think it's Procreate is raster. This is very vector heavy. Mm-hmm. It does have some raster capabilities, but they're limited. Kind of like, Affinity Photo for iPad is very raster heavy with a little bit of vector ability.
Right.
But I have Affinity Photo and I have Procreate, and if I'm doing illustration, I use Procreate. So I mean, I don't think it in any way destroys Procreate. I think Procreate's brilliant.
Have you gone in and noticed how you can like adjust the thickness of the different points and stuff like that?
In
Affinity Designer, yeah, it's crazy. It's like it brings a kind of like procedural or non-destructive form of working to drawing, which is just
making me save my nickels for a bigger iPad. I really like the 9.7.
Would you go 12.9 or 10.5?
I don't know. I actually installed it on the 12.9 iPad at the office just to play with it some, and I don't know. Not sure if I'd do 10.5 or 12.9.
Well, we'll see when the new ones come out too, because the 10.5 is going to be more like the 12.9. Anyway, we got to get going.
Yeah.
Lunch break is over. That bird from the Flintstones has whistled. Thank you guys for listening. Have a wonderful...
Yes.
Well, I don't know what time of day. Just have a wonderful...
Yeah, have it be wonderful.
Have a wonderful time of day or night.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Bye.